Hi, this is Patrick Cox in the World Newsroom in Boston, and you're listening to The World in Words, number 15. The Chinese are learning English in huge numbers. One day there may be more English-speaking Chinese than English-speaking Americans. Will that spell the end of Chinglish? Let's hope not. Bad English is almost as funny as bad Chinese. We'll hear samples of both today.
As a free man, I take pride in the word, Ich bin ein Berliner.
Why, as an American, do I have to push a button to speak English?
There are known knowns. There are things we know that we know.
Thank you, Borat. The World is co-produced by the BBC World Service, Public Radio International, and WGBH in Boston. You can hear the big show on more than 230 public radio stations around the United States. For more on that and more on all of our podcasts, go to theworld.org. So today we're going to hear about efforts in China and Taiwan to learn English. Then we're going to hear from a couple of Americans who learned Chinese and who made some amusing linguistic pratfalls along the way. First, here's a report on English language learning in China from the BBC's Daniel Griffiths.
A lively start to the morning at Chen Jinglun School in Beijing. There are 50 pupils here in this classroom, all dressed in their traditional uniform of tracksuits, yellow t-shirts and red neckerchiefs. And they're getting ready to start their daily English lessons with teacher Li Wei.
Now, class begins. Good morning, class.
Good morning, Miss Li.
Sit down, please. Now, read after me. Successful.
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 These children are part of a growing trend. There are now 300 million people here believed to be studying English. At the height of the Cold War, Russian was the language to learn. But economic reform and opening to the West have changed all that. As China becomes a key part of the global economy, many people here believe that having a second language like English is a good way to get ahead. And the government is making sure they start young. Well, class is over, and that gives me a chance to catch up with one of the students, Jiang Chuyun, and also the teacher, Miss Li. Jiang Chuyun, do you enjoy studying English?
I like English very much, because it's very interesting, and I don't think it's very difficult.
And when you've finished studying here and gone to university, what do you want to do after that?
I want to go abroad and be a lawyer.
Miss Li, how important is it for these students to be studying English now?
We English teacher often tells them how important it is to learn a second language. And also in China, our second language is English, so we all like it.
With so many people studying English, it's also become big business here. And I've come across town to the Chinese publishing house of one of the most successful school textbooks for learning English. I'm sitting out in the gardens here, and with me is one of the commissioning editors, Shen Chu. Shen Chu, just how successful have your books been in China?
We just have sold 100 million units in the market, but it's still growing.
Still growing. So what are the plans for the future?
We have already sold our books to 22 provinces, which means most of the provinces have already used our books. So for junior and senior high, we hope we can approach that.
And I gather you've got your son interested in the books, even though he's only 5 years old.
I already showed our books, and he's quite interested in it.
Back at Chen Jinglun School, Miss Li is starting a new class, and there are plenty of eager students. China's determined to produce a whole generation of English speakers. That's not going to happen overnight, but there are hundreds of millions of people already hitting the books, hoping it might one day give them a brighter future.
That's the BBC's Daniel Griffiths in Beijing. I thought it was really telling that the student he interviewed spoke better English than her teacher did. She may not have known many English words, but she just sounded more at ease, less robotic than her teacher. Now, I wasn't sure whether I could take that generational difference, that little snapshot, and project it onto all Chinese people who are learning English. So I asked Mary Kay Magstad. She's the world's Beijing correspondent. And she told me that older Chinese people are at a disadvantage when it comes to English skills, even people in their 20s and 30s.
They may have studied English for 10 years, 12 years, but they don't necessarily feel comfortable speaking it. They've been taught it in a way where they can pass the written exams, and they haven't necessarily had as much of an opportunity to practice with other people who speak English. I've actually attended some Chinese English classes where someone stands up in front of a very large group of students and lectures, and the students really don't practice speaking at all.
Now, I imagine the Olympics is providing something of a, at least people can practice with so many foreigners in town.
Certainly. And in fact, cab drivers have been encouraged to try to learn taxi English, to try to learn certain phrases that their customers are likely to be using or that they'll want to use with their customers. The fruit vendor I go to down the back street near where I live, last time I went there, they were practicing English names of banana, plum, pear, whatever, for the first time. I mean, in the past, I've always used Chinese when I was asking for things. And they were very pleased. And they said, oh, the Olympics are coming up. We're going to have people coming here who are going to be asking for these things. So we need to know what to say.
Do you get a sense that the Chinese are more interested in learning English than, say, the Japanese, who've been trying for many decades to do so? But generally, when you go to Japan, there are not that many English speakers.
Yeah, I think the level of English-speaking competence in China has come up very quickly in the last 10 years. I mean, the first time I lived in China was about 10, 12 years ago. And at that time, it was very difficult to find people just randomly who spoke decent English. Now, if you go out, and I know this because I've had guests who have come in recently who I've sent out, and they've had a slightly easier time finding people who can at least speak some English, who they could at least partially communicate with. But even they came back and said, you know, this is a really hard place to get around in if you don't speak the language.
Mary Kay Magstad, the world's Beijing correspondent. For our last little take on how Chinese speakers are learning English, we go to Taiwan. English has been taught in the schools there for a long time now, longer than in China. But there's a lot of dissatisfaction with the way English is taught. So the Taiwanese have imported an idea from other Asian countries. It's part theme park, part summer camp. Here's the BBC's Caroline Gluck.
Children hold passports and tickets ready to board a plane. Across the street, there's a traditional red British phone booth, a grocery store, pharmacy, and a bank. We're not actually at an airport, but at the Happy English Village, a language immersion centre that's just opened in Taoyuan County, about an hour from Taiwan's capital. There are 12 different classrooms with different themes. For example, this one is the airport. There's a custom room, a check-in area, and there's even part of a plane that has been donated by a local airline. All kinds of different classrooms that gets the children to learn new words and practice speaking. The project is the idea of a private non-profit group, the King Car Education Foundation. Its general director, Morgan Sun, said he was inspired after visiting similar English villages that had opened in South Korea.
Last year, I found out they have lots of English village. They improved their young generation. They speak better English than Taiwan kids. So this is why I decided if we want to improve our English, we have to give young generation a world region.
So what do you think is wrong with the existing way that children are taught English in schools?
Right now in Taiwan, English education is still like 40 years ago. Just remember the words and the grammar and pass the test. But we very few chance to talk to the foreigner. I hope this village give their confidence and interest to learn better English.
At Happy English Village, there are no written tests. The emphasis is on speaking and learning while having fun. The children certainly seem to be enjoying their new learning environment.
My name is Kent. I'm 10 years old. I feel good at this school. It's different. All English. In this school, I can speak English.
My name is Tony. I like this school. It has science class and a bank, shop, airport.
My name is Phoebe. I'm 10 years old. It is fun and can learn other countries' language.
I think the immersion method with the hands-on and the more realistic environment is much more meaningful to the students.
Marlin Martin is a volunteer and retired school teacher from the U.S.
They can relate their learning in class to something that's real to the world. Rote memorization, the knowledge does not stick because there's nothing to hang it on in the kid's life. A student has to have life experiences before they really remember what we're trying to teach them.
Would you say there's a fever in Taiwan to learn English?
Not just Taiwan, it's all over the Asian countries, South Korea, Japan, Taiwan, China. I think people are realizing, the parents especially, that for their students to be more successful, they need to have a command of the English language. And they're willing to go to some sacrifices on their part, financially and otherwise and time-wise, to make sure that their children do get English.
Children come to the village for just 2 days, hardly enough time to get anyone fluent in a foreign language. But it is long enough to make them enthusiastic about wanting to learn more. Organizers say the school is just a start. They plan to build more English villages and hope that in the future, children could stay for a week at a time, or even longer. And the idea looks like catching on, with several other county governments now drawing up plans to open up their own English villages. For The World, I'm Caroline Gluck in Taoyuan County, Taiwan.
So, all this improvement in English speaking, will this spell the end of Chinglish? Chinglish, of course, is that hybrid of Chinese and English that's most delightfully expressed in those public signs that you see all over the Chinese-speaking world, signs that completely mangle the English language. Things like, please don't cross any railings lest suddenness happens. Or, automatic faucet, unnecessary touching. There's one sign I saw in a bathroom at Beijing's airport that was so unintentionally disgusting that I actually really don't feel I can repeat it right now. That sign is probably no longer on display. You may have heard that authorities are trying to get rid of all the Chinglish signs in Beijing, so that Olympic tourists aren't confused or amused by them. We called up the Wall Street Journal's China correspondent, Mei Fong, about this. Here she is in conversation with The World's Lisa Mullins.
There are some instances where mistranslations can be very poetic. For example, ski culture is relatively new here in China. If you go to the ski resorts, one of the things that amuses is the signs of the ski lift, where they say, don't make the skis fall down, instead of don't let your skis fall down. So that's one.
Yeah, another?
There's one I took off a bus stop sign, and it was an advertisement for what we would assume would be a fertility hospital, except that it was called the Tianlong Sterility Hospital. But the funny thing about that was they were also using a picture of Steve Martin. I don't know about this, but I really didn't think that Steve Martin was probably, in all knowing fact, acting as a spokesperson for the sterility hospital in Beijing.
Yeah, this might be surprising for Steve Martin, although you never quite know. Maybe he'd get a laugh out of it, too. But, you know, that actually brings up a good question, May, because you're saying, you know, of course, nobody wants to be thought of as being backwards or laughed at or whatever. I wonder if the Chinese authorities realize that there are some foreigners who actually get a kick out of the gaffes.
But with the Beijing 2008 Olympics coming up, they expect all eyes will be on Beijing. And that's not a situation where they want to be seen as an object of laughter or ridicule by any means. The Olympics for them is a very big platform for them to show the world that, you know, China is coming to its own as a global power.
So how are they even finding these signs to begin with?
The government of Beijing formed a committee in 2002 specifically looking at raising the levels of English in the city before the Olympics. Now they announced that they were going to start an 8-month campaign to actively remove all the signs which are wrong and replace them with a much more standardized, correct form of English for the signs. So you might say that they're a little bit like a sign police.
Like sign police. And how many signs in all are they replacing?
It's going to be thousands because they're going to be all, you know, museums, parks, shopping centers, everything.
I wonder what the Chinese think of this.
Most of the Chinese people I spoke to said, yeah, we don't want foreigners to laugh at us. One of the Chinese people I interviewed, she said, you know, we're still a very young nation in many ways as far as a global power is considered. You know, only in the last few years have we been sort of coming up and being seen as a nation with strong power and influence. And we're not confident in ourselves enough to be laughed at, we still can't take it.
That's a really interesting point. Well, for those who have a bit of a soft spot for some of these signs, I mean, I wonder for you, May, if there's one that you hope that this team of sign police happen to miss.
Well, I would very much be sorry to see the end to the show mercy to the slender grass in the public parks. You know, keep off the grass just sounds so harsh in comparison.
Well, maybe they'll leave one or two of those in some public parks.
Yeah, hopefully so.
May Fong, China correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. Thank you very much, May.
Thank you.
Personally, I think Chinglish will survive. It may even thrive. There are just too many of these signs in China already, and too many officials who wouldn't think to actually consult anyone with any knowledge of the English language before commissioning more signs. Okay, on to another weird Chinese translation, but now we're flipping subject and object, so to speak. We're translating from English into Chinese. This is another Lisa Mullins interview. In fact, it's part two of our interview with Elizabeth Little, author of Biting the Wax Tadpole, Confessions of a Language Fanatic. Back to Lisa.
Talk about when you went to China. You studied in China, and in fact, that's where the title of the book comes from. Mm-hmm. Biting the Wax Tadpole has an interesting derivation.
It does. It does. When Coca-Cola was introduced in China in the 1920s, Coke obviously had to come up with a Chinese transliteration so that they could use Chinese characters to advertise their product. And it took them a little while to come up with the best name. And what they did come up with is brilliant, actually. It means it's Coca-Cola, which translates literally as sort of happiness in the mouth or delicious happiness. But before they managed to get to that point, the Chinese shopkeepers who were already selling the product had to come up with their own set of characters. And what many of them used was a phrase that was very similar, that sounded very similar. It was Coca-Cola. But unfortunately, it meant bite the wax tadpole.
Which, did people find that funny or was that?
Well, I think that for Chinese speakers, they're well used to having certain sort of nonsense syllables used for phonetic transliteration.
Hmm. Like, but, like,
well, for instance, Western names will all be, they will sound similar. The literal meanings will be nonsense. But so like Clinton for Bill Clinton would be Colin Dunn, which means repress forest pause.
So when they translate the name Clinton, do they do it just for the phonetics or for
exactly.
the meaning?
Not just for the
meaning.
The
so they ignore the meaning
exactly.
of it. That's strange exactly. to have a word that you then ignore the meaning of. Is that just with proper names?
Yeah, it's primarily with proper names. For everything else, there is actually a meaning that's attached to it. But that's what you get with Chinese characters, where you don't have an alphabet. So you don't have a script that's independent of meaning. Every character has an associated meaning.
Okay, so we're talking about Coca-Cola then. I know that a lot of this, when you were especially studying in China, became fairly frustrating for you.
It was. Chinese is very different from English, obviously, and the sounds in particular are very different. And one of the main quirks of Chinese is a tonal language, which means that the sort of pitch and the modulation of a sound that you make can change the meaning.
Give me an example.
So, for instance, you would have a word like ma, which means mother, but if you say it ma, it means horse.
Was that because you had a little dip in there?
Exactly.
Okay, so it's not kind of the tone on the scale.
Right. There are four main tones in Chinese. There's this one that sort of stays high and steady, like ma, and then there's a rising tone, which is ma, then there's the dipping tone, ma, and then a falling tone, ma. And all four of those words mean different things.
That can get you in a lot of trouble.
Exactly.
Did it?
Exactly. It did. I had so much trouble using tones correctly, and I know that I said some truly embarrassing things that people didn't even inform me of. So,
thankfully, probably. So this book was sort of revenge.
Exactly.
How many languages do you speak?
I've studied formally French, Italian, Chinese, classical Chinese, and ancient Greek.
Classical Chinese being?
Being sort of the equivalent of ancient Greek to modern Greek.
Now, why would you study ancient Greek and classical Chinese?
Well, I find that when you study written languages, it provides a real... I'm better in writing than I am in speech, which is probably why I've chosen the profession that I have. And there's something that's very soothing about just being able to focus on the words on a page, mm-hmm. as opposed to having to leap right into asking where the bathroom is or how to get to the tourist office.
Can you ask us where the bathroom is in ancient Chinese?
No, I actually have no idea what the word for bathroom would be.
Okay, how about could you put mayonnaise on that? All right. How about could you put duck sauce on that?
So perhaps it's not the most useful thing. Usually it's, you know, translating poems from the 8th century, which is, you know, all about getting drunk and looking at the moon.
We should say this was another frustration of yours. I mean, you get so deep into many of these languages that there's no real practical use for them.
Yeah, that was one of the most frustrating things also about my modern Chinese studies. And unfortunately, I'm horribly out of practice with Mandarin, but in college, they focused the vocabulary so much on political and economic topics because I guess they were training us to go into those fields that when I got to China, I didn't know how to say things like shoes or feet. Yeah. At one point, I was in a monastery and I'm very, very tall and everyone always wanted to know how tall I was. And these monks said, "How tall are you?" But I didn't know how to say English feet, and I had no idea how tall I was in meters. So we ended up having to line up all of the monks, and then I stood in front of each one, and then they tried to sort of gauge how tall I was in meters. And eventually they came to a really good estimate. So
they were pretty close.
Exactly. I'm about 1.86 meters.
So. Which is how many inches?
6'1".
The inappropriately named Elizabeth Little. You can hear part one of our interview with Elizabeth in The World in Words number 5. And now, this.
My name's Joe Sinisi. I'm originally from Denver, Colorado. I've lived in China before in 95 and 96, and I really enjoyed my experience there. I was a teacher primarily at Zhengfa Dashui, which is the College of Politics and Law in China. Ever since then, I wanted to get back. I've worked overseas a lot of places, and finally this year, after a 12-year hiatus, I came back to China, and I've learned now more than ever it's very important for foreigners to have a much stronger command of Mandarin, the national language. People do expect foreigners to make mistakes, but they're very patient and they're appreciative that you're trying. Once I was taking a train ride, and these rides can be many hours long, so I was going to buy some instant noodles. So I went to a shop in the station, and I wanted to order some fang bian mian, which means convenient noodles. I unfortunately said da bian mian, which means big comfort, but that's the Chinese euphemism for having to defecate. So I ordered some defecation noodles, much to the amusement of the shopkeeper. A good word in Chinese is tong, which means same, and that you can add that into a lot of other words, like tongzhi means same thought, and that's what they use for comrade in the Communist Party. That's not really used commonly anymore. But tongshang means someone who comes from the same town. So I had a friend of mine visiting from Denver when I was teaching in Beijing, and I brought him to one of my English classes, and I just wanted to introduce him in Chinese. I wanted to say, this is my tongshang, my same town buddy. But I said tongxinlian, which xinlian means same sex love. So I introduced him, instead of as my from the same town, I introduced him as my homosexual. So that got the students a bit amused, but I think they knew what I really meant to say.
That's it for this week. Send me your complaints, lots of them please, and compliments, even more of those please. The address is language@pri.org, or write to me via my Facebook group, The World in Words. Next week, West Africa, the meaning of names in Ghana, and why the Senegalese are so good at Scrabble. Till then, Taijian, and enjoy the games.